You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
What would you think if I said to you everything that you see, everything that you hear, everything that you know about life, its structure, what's good and bad, is all false? Our whole belief system, ours, yours, everyone's, is based upon what they already believe, that you build and filter information on what your preconceived biases are. If you believe these things, then you tend to believe other things that reinforce that, and you tend to not believe things that go against that. And it's not only belief, it's you don't even recognize the information. If you're on your cell phone and you search for, what do you want to search for?
Book for relationship.
You search for a book on relationship. Now, everywhere you go, you're going to start seeing books on relationships popping up that the web decides matches your before searched items will start appearing. They'll appear in your YouTube feed, they'll appear in your Facebook feed,
and
Instagram,
Google search.
Yeah. That the challenge is that everything that you've looked for and are interested in gets regurgitated back to you, and the things that are maybe the opposite ideas and the opposite things don't. So if you're of one political persuasion or one religion or one worldview, that when you start looking into those things, all of a sudden, you're only facing information that supports your already preconceived view. Now, if you're older, you may recognize that and you may say, I need to go out of my way and look for other information. Now, I want to do research. I want to look up actual information on that. So let's go to an actual point. Mm-hmm. Just before the show, we were looking at a video made by a gentleman on running, and it was a 30-second or 1 minute long TikTok video, and it was made by this guy called Vishen Lakhiani, who is a representative of Mind Valley, or he is Mind Valley. He promotes Silva Ultramind Technique. And Silva Ultramind Technique, let's actually talk about that real quick. When we were kids, well, when I was a kid and you weren't yet...
No,
you were even younger.
You are in the university.
So third, fourth, fifth grade, I remember getting a book. It was a little book. I believe it was reddish, maroon, with silver on it. Actually, that's interesting. Silver on it, but it was like the Silva Mind Technique, and it was a book about using your mind to create things, to attract things. It was almost like the law of attraction was in there. Other things were in there. The point of it was is that this has been around for a long time.
And I read the same book.
And we both read it. And look at us now.
We are together. It's work.
It's amazing. We have this show. We have everything we have because of this technique.
And I dreamed that almost 20 years ago.
We did. And you know what's interesting? Actually, we're joking a little bit, but at the same time, that we can point to that we read that one book. But you know what? We have 1,000 books we read. And we have education. And we have our family. We have our culture and society where we were, the friends that we grew up with, and all those things also impacted and affected us. And each thing played their part of the puzzle to what we accepted, put together, and said, these link, and we agree with these things, and they're now part of our brain. Mm-hmm. And then there were other things that we rejected. So maybe we didn't reject Silva Mind Control, the Silva method. Mm-hmm. Maybe we didn't reject it, but it doesn't mean that we then followed in its path, but it may have just been another thing we thought about and were open to. And in that was, I believe, we talked about the law of attraction could have been in there, and other things that were mind-based things on achieving success. I believe this was actually something that was either promoted by my elementary school, or it was a book that was available to children in one of the reading programs where you could get a book, like you'd sign up for a couple of books and they'd bring them to you. Mm-hmm. So now I'm wondering maybe if the schools
maybe
were
like
promoting it.
The theory, yeah. So you not choose the book.
The book chose me. Mm. Mm-hmm. Just like I don't choose the wife. The wife chooses me. That's works.
Everything works.
It's works. So that's all about this book. This book shows you how Lizette chose me. It's actually kind of interesting. It's called the 90-Day Soulmate Solution. It's the 90-Day Soulmate Technique. We joke a little bit. So going back to this person. Mm-hmm. This person says, running is bad for you. Vision says, running is useless. It is a negative exercise. You should stop doing it immediately. It's the stupidest thing. Nike invented it to sell shoes in 1965. Okay, so Nike invented running in 1965 to sell shoes. He says running is the stupidest thing. What he just said is almost the stupidest thing. Now, we're gonna. There's so many layers to this. Number one layer, what was his motivation of doing this 30-second video? Was it to get everyone to talk about it so that he would become
like
even
you?
More famous?
Like us.
Like us. We're going to talk about it to make him more famous.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that his motivation? Does he actually believe that? Is there a larger context? Is he trying to get people to say, hey, wait, you're wrong, and then he speaks more about what he is talking about? Is that the case? It could be. Also, Nike inventing, right? 1965. We went to Greece a couple of years back. We went to, what was that? Mount Olympus?
Mm-hmm.
What was there?
The Olympic.
The early Olympics, which I believe were BC, right?
Olympia,
Mount Olympia.
Yeah.
That the ancient Greeks had the Olympics. They had discuses, right? They had, or those disci. Discuses. Well, they had guys as well as discuses. They had javelins, other throwing implements. They had the track. So there was running. So unless he meant that Nike, some other Nike, some guy named Nike in 1965 BC invented running.
Exactly.
It wasn't 1965 AD.
Nike's coming from Greek.
The sneakers came from Greece. They had the Nike sandals. Sandike, I believe it was called. Sandike was the name of it at that point. But he made something that's obviously not true. He said something obviously not true. Now, did Nike invent marketing behind sneakers in 1965? That could be true. And maybe that was the way for him to get people really to be critical of what he was saying and then go deeper and then understand there's more to it than what he was saying. The other thing is, he's all over the place with videos. He's got about like 150,000, maybe even more subscribers and people who like what he says. One of the things that I saw, another one that I saw, because now he's in my feed because I started looking for him. So now all my feed that he pops up, he does one where this woman used the Silva Mind Technique 8 years ago or 10 years ago. And before that, she only had $8 in her pocket. And today she owns 600 acres in Costa Rica. She has giant homes that she's building, these beautiful mansions, and she's building another one and another one, and she's doing all this development, all because of the secrets in the Silva Mind Technique, the Ultra Mind.
Can be.
The point is that we take unique experiences, right? This is a unique experience, and we promote it, and he's a big promoter, right? Promoter of stuff that
is... So maybe we need to hire her to promote our book.
So, again, we are open to many of the Silva Mind Techniques. I want to believe, although a lot of evidence has shown me that it's tough to believe, but sometimes things happen that fit, and you go, well, like we were talking about today's Wordle.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself, today's Wordle, what is it going to be? What is it going to be? What is it going to be? And I thought the word's going to, I just, envision that the word's going to be adept, A-D-E-P-T. But I thought that was an odd word to use, so I'm going to start off with amber, A-M-B-E-R. Now, if you know Wordle, it tells you what letters are right, what letters are wrong. Now, the A was correct, and there was another word in there, another letter in there. What was the other letter? There was another letter in there that was not. But anyway, going through, the word turned out to be adopt. Now, I'm going in my head, I'm going, that's odd. How would I think the words adept and then the actual word of today is adopt?
Because you read the book De Silva when you were a child.
I could have, and maybe that was...
I'm sorry.
But I try to do that when I do Wordle, is I'm like, what do I think today's word is? And then a word will sometimes pop into my head. And, you know, how often is it like really accurate or close or the exact one? It tends to seem to be me leaning like it's possible. Like I have this lean towards it's possible, but it's like, how do you make it happen all the time? So where I'm going with this is that there are things you want to believe. And so when you have evidence that shows you that it might be true, you put that into your pre-existing belief system. It's part of your biases. It's an affirmation or confirmation of a bias you already have. And it's something called confirmation bias. That now after today's word, I have increased my thinking that this could be true. The point of this... So, going back, is if there's a child out there who goes, I don't like running, and they just say, running's bad for you, and this video pops up of this guy who's got thousands of followers, who stands on stage with a microphone, dressed well, with a whole large audience listening to him, and he says, running is bad, it's stupid, it was invented, it's dangerous. And you've already thought to yourself, I don't like running. You now start going down this path of finding all these videos of people who don't like running, and they give you, quote, limited amount of evidence for that. So how do you fight against that? What do you do? Do you look up what are the benefits of running?
We don't have time, so we just sitting. Also, you just see right now how we see news or see any kind of program. You have to talk in the first 1 minute. If you have 2 or 3 minutes, the people stop to watch. So the first information coming and you eating, and you don't have time to research because it's in the media, it's true.
Summary. So what we did is we looked up, we wanted a counter, is maybe this guy's right. I thought, okay, he's wrong, definitely, because I run, right? So I thought, definitely he's wrong. Then I said, well, maybe he's right. So when I look up benefits of running, but now I bias looked up what's the benefits. Here's the benefits of running. That running at least 10 minutes a day significantly lowers the risk of cardiovascular disease. It lowers the risk of mortality from heart disease by half, and it reduces your resting heart rate, which is an indicator of overall health and fitness. So you can find study after study after study that talks about running, the activity of running, as a benefit. Beyond that, I just go back to survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. If running's bad for you, then maybe in evolutionary biology, we would have never, ever developed running because it was bad for us. But instead, we ran in order to catch prey and not to be prey. That's funny. Eat and pray. Right?
Is this a commercial?
That's a movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pray, eat, love.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the three things. Eat, pray, and after you eat the prey, you have time to love.
Yeah.
Perfect. But let's go back to running. Running is naturally developed by humans. Actually, all animals, right? I mean, if you look at all animals, they're running from each other constantly.
Bring a cell phone to one animal and stop running.
How to stop animals from running? Give them a cell phone.
That's it.
We just solved the problem of running. It's no more dangerous anymore.
How about running with a cell phone?
Hmm? How about running with a cell phone?
Can be dangerous.
That's even more dangerous.
Yeah.
The point is that we believe, from evolutionary biology standpoint, running was developed for survival of the species, therefore a good thing. Running also helped us lower, as we looked at the research, it helps you have better cardiovascular health. There are benefits of it. Are there dangers of running? Yes. You talked about the girl who ran 17 miles a day.
Yeah, so she had 14 years old and she liked to practice, I don't know, it's volleyball, something like that, and then she running every day. And
for 17 miles.
And the doctor, she went to the doctor said stop because has some rib damage in some part.
There are things I've heard that are bad for you of doing too much mileage. Also, she was 14 years old. And that can delay other biological developments in a human being, is that you can be so thin, so much energy can go into this, that some of the development activity of the human body is delayed. So I don't know if that was something that was brought up too.
I don't know completely the case, but...
You can wear out hips, you can wear out knees at such a young age, you need time, and I think the resulting thing the doctor said is you need to stop for a year.
For a year.
Let your body rebuild, regrow, and get stronger again.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that yes, what was that, extremes? When you do something in an extreme, it can be bad for you.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going on a diet in an extreme, that's bad for me. I'm eating in an extreme, that's bad for me. I'm running in an extreme, it's bad for, you know.
So we go to break the chart.
We're gonna go to break. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about media influence. Break the cycle. We talked about having misinformation, disinformation, bad information, good information, where it comes from, why it's there, what's the underlying motivation of where that information is coming from, what are they trying to get us to do as a result of it. Don't know, maybe they want controversy, they want people to listen more, there's an other message, they want to sell us something, they want more listeners. More followers, more likers?
Oh, haters.
Haters. When we were kids, we watched a show called, well, I don't know about you, but I watched a show called Happy Days. If you watch the show and you like the show, you start seeing that show as a representation of what life should be like, potentially, for you. And therefore, it becomes a model of behavior for an adolescent to follow. So these are programs. So there are programs that they're programmed in a time slot on TV, but they also become programs for us. When we talk about stuff like Disney, the Snow White movie, as well as Cinderella,
mm-hmm.
What did we talk about? Snow White is...
the stepmother is bad mother.
Yeah, stepmother's evil.
Yeah, you're waiting for your prince come and rescue in the...
Teaching adolescent girls, right? Teaching young girls. Actually, the Snow White was designed after an average 13-year-old girl of 1945 or whenever the movie was done by Disney. That studies show that she was shaped after, height-wise, weight-wise, looks-wise, the average 13-year-old girl. I believe that was the age group. Now, this show, Snow White, was shown to children, right? Mm-hmm. So it was shown to younger boys and girls. So they see a 13-year-old, average 13-year-old girl acting in this way, that becomes their model of behavior for the future, right? So they see that someone's going to treat them badly, a prince is going to come along and save them, that they're being, this is a program, it's one of many, so it's not the, and if you only are caught up in certain, what is it called, certain genre, certain types of books, like just children's fantasy books, they may give you a false sense of what reality is.
No. So the rescue part, I see many cases of couple when the man tried to rescue the woman and feel sort of attraction for when the woman is what is they call weak or need help. And they do want to risk the woman, so that is coming for the prince. The prince has to risk the woman, is almost sleeping in one castle, is trapped. So, so many cases the men want attract to woman, maybe he's alcoholic, maybe he's crazy because they want to risk, like, when she's with me, I can transfer her.
Mm.
You know, if sometimes.
And it's true the opposite way too. Is women are trying to rescue men, right? So, is this part of the program that they had when they were younger? If somebody's in distress, that they should help them, and if they help them, that becomes a happily ever after episode.
Yeah.
I was thinking of other ones here, but let's go into like
the
finding.
Cognitive, yeah.
Which one?
The next one, because
the Finding Nemo, Rugrats, that one, Peppa Pig, Blue's Clues. Yeah.
Yeah. So now I say the concept that you describe in the next slide is pretty good.
Oh, okay. And I'll get there in one sec. So I wanted to just talk about Finding Nemo, Rugrats, Peppa Pig, Blue's Clues. All these things have the positive aspects. And one of the ones that I want to bring up, which I think has been around for a long time, Sesame Street. So Sesame Street, The Electric Company, other things like that, which were educational TV shows for children, that if you looked at how Sesame Street was developed, that every show had a teaching plan to it. So it was a very well thought out, well-conceived plan by a group that had, I believe, an educational and entertainment background.
Mm-hmm.
That it talked about, today we're going to introduce the letter A, we're going to repeat it three times through the show, we're going to have some family value section, have a friends value section, we're going to have a food value section. And it was created to be educational as well as to impart certain behavioral norms to the children who were watching it. There was a target market for the show, and then there was a large group of people who watched it. I grew up watching that. And you start to see how people are interacting in that show, and it is setting a model example of how we should be getting along with other people, right? So when we look at Finding Nemo and Rugrats and Peppa the Pig, now they can push extremes. They're cartoons, so they may have unrealistic things, or they may have things that we face, but they're shown in a cartoon sense, so it can kind of distance us a little from the situation, but address something that maybe if they were real life characters would be more difficult to address. And then finally, these things, these shows, these things that we grew up in, they create our belief systems along with our religion, our culture, our family, our where we grow up, our friends, that these are all part of our belief systems. And as such, they also become part of our filtering system through this. Whoops, let's go to the next one here. So we have something in psychology called cognitive bias. It's just a definition of, it is our thought process, a systematic thought process. It's caused by the tendency of the human brain to simplify information processing through a filter of personal experience and preferences. So it uses our personal experience and our preferences to filter what we actually take in as new information. So we'll see and have preferences for things that we already agree with and believe and find acceptable. And we'll filter out things that we don't already know, things that we don't believe, and things that we don't find acceptable. So we build more and more and more around the things that we already believe. And if you think about that, we talked about neuroplasticity in the brain and neurons, that areas of our brain that we have certain thoughts in, it's easy to add more thoughts to that and grow that. And we can do that, and if we ignore the stuff that we're not agreeing with, we never grow thoughts in that area.
Yeah.
We never grow, what is that called? Objective comparisons between two sides of an argument.
Mm-hmm.
These biases, or should I say the cognitive bias, is a filtering process. It's a coping mechanism. Why is it called a coping mechanism? Because there's so much information.
Mm.
When we walk into a room, there's 1 million things in the room we're in. There's colors, there's objects, there's screws, there's lights, there's textures, and there's every object has so many things. So what we tend to do is we tend to take an object and we ignore all the things that make that object unique. And we just, like, here's a camera. It's a camera. We're not looking at the camera, at every single aspect of the camera. We're not looking at the lens. We're not looking at the button. We're not looking at the viewfinder. We just see it real quick as a camera. Why? We're making a quick observation, generalization, in order for us to process all the information.
And also, you know how loose light the camera, so the man you identify that as a camera.
You do, and if you didn't know what a camera looked like, you would see that thing, not know what it is, and therefore not process it.
Yeah, and you cannot recognize. Yeah.
It's hard to recognize.
Yeah.
Right? So you're absolutely right. So this cognitive bias helps us process information efficiently, but it also then makes us not see things that we would have otherwise seen if we were more open to other viewpoints and other things that weren't filtered. Mm. Now that we've been programmed with certain things and we now have certain beliefs, we have family beliefs, we have religious beliefs, we have social and political beliefs, beliefs on anything, right? Beliefs on money, on capital, on types of government. We have beliefs on weather. We have beliefs on
healthy.
What is health?
Yeah.
That all those things will now create something called a confirmation bias, that we will start looking for and accepting information that confirms our beliefs. We will be accepting of new information that we can add to the existing information and beliefs we have to support our viewpoint. And where this all goes is that you could have a certain belief, let's just say it's political, and you could have someone else who has the opposite belief, and you could think they're a total nut, they're crazy. How can they believe that? One, you can't actually understand their belief because you don't have the ability to objectively look at their viewpoint because you don't have that actual brain portion that they do that has accepted all those areas. You have your brain portions that has accepted all your area, but now both of you think you are so smart, so accepting, so understanding that you can't understand why the other thinks the way they do. Yeah. You know that old expression? If you walk in the other person's shoes for a mile, mm-hmm. Well, you can't understand somebody else's extreme point of view unless you walked in their shoes since the day they were born with their DNA.
Because all context.
Because part of this can be, part of the way we think can be inborn. Mm-hmm. If we are more literal or more figurative, if we're more math or if we're more English, that these ways our brains think, the patterns of thinking and how we process are inborn. We then add information and we add more ability to think on top of that. But if we're now 30 plus years old and we've developed a way of thinking all these years, we may never be able to truly understand how someone else thinks, which leads us into problems mm-hmm. in relationship,
yeah.
Right? So you have a certain thought about something, I have a certain thought about something, and if it's not close, you may think that I'm going to convince you, or I may think you'll convince me, whatever. We think we can talk it through, but we have no ability. We're 30 years separate in our brain thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But on the outer surface, we smile, we go on a date, we're in lust, we love each other, and then all of a sudden our brain patterns emerge and are like, what the heck am I? Who's that person? I don't know them. Anyway, so how do we get beyond this?
You use this example for Ooh. Touch me, I see.
That's it. That's why I did it. A few weeks, months, who knows when ago, a while ago, we talked about a guy named Dr. Robert Cialdini, who wrote a book. He's wrote a number of books, but one is called Influence. I read it years ago in an effort to understand it in relationship to marketing. It has to do with persuasion, trying to persuade people to do things. And of course, in marketing, you want to persuade people to do things. But let's talk about influence in terms of social media and influencers. So influencers, in the book Influence, he talks about, Cialdini talks about liking, reciprocity, consistency, authority, consensus, and scarcity. Now, today, that's not the order he did it in his book, but we're going to talk about that when it comes to influencers. Number one thing that hit us was liking.
Yeah.
That the number one thing for an influencer to influence you is for you to like them.
And we see how the social media, the first stuff like. Is like.
So yeah. you raise your hand and say, I like you. They've got the first step of getting you. Now they can influence you because you like them. Mm-hmm. It's one step. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually it'd be interesting if the second one was reciprocity. But liking is, let's go back to liking. If somebody presents themselves in a way that you find acceptable, mm-hmm. that they're speaking about something that you're pre-biased to, because this builds upon your confirmation bias. Oh, they're saying something that I agree with. Now, so you like them, and you like them even more because of what they're saying. There's certain other things we'll get into. Next, reciprocity. If I like you, I'll now have access to being given an alarm when you have new information coming out. So I get something in return for like a subscribe, right? I subscribe, and now I get new, every time you post something new, it shows up on my feed. So it's give and take, reciprocity. Reciprocity is when somebody does something, you do something in return. In influence, if I met Lizette for the first time and I gave her flowers, and she accepted the flowers, reciprocity would be she feels she owes me something in return. Okay, I'll go out with him and I'll treat him nicer than I was going to because he gave me flowers.
No, but this is also remind me the movies that I saw about the pharmaceutical business, you know? So the training for people, the sales department, is the first is you need to be likely with the doctor. And you have to be the friend of the doctor.
Friend of the doctor and like.
So we know you don't want to sell nothing. And then the reciprocity is after when you say, okay, I offer a go to weekend to the beach. If you do 25 prescribe our medicine. So.
Or the opposite is just, I'm being really friendly with you. We're going to have a cruise. You're invited to the cruise. Nothing in return at that point.
Yeah.
Now the doctor goes on that cruise, they get back, and now they feel like, well, they like you, they got this, now what, they have to do something in return. It can be unspoken, or it can be an actual coercion, which is, I will do this for you if you do this for me, which is more of a coercion
the
in a way.
Always the competitor person walking to the doctor with one gift in the hand. So always ask, that is the way that you.
Well, we got more about media influence and influencers and Cialdini when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about media influence. How to break the spell. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we were talking about Cialdini. We were talking about the six steps of influence: liking, reciprocity, consistency, authority, consensus, and scarcity. We talked about liking, how social media influencers, that the first step is for you to like them. That gets you going on being influenced by them. And number two, reciprocity. You subscribe, they give you something in return, you get alarms, maybe you get notifications, you get invites. You also get the benefit of talking and commenting on their stuff with other people who also like them, and you end up joining a community. Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's talk about consistency. Mm-hmm. So consistency, Cialdini talks about consistency in this manner, and I'll paraphrase. I come up to somebody and I say, hey, would you give me $5 for this bumper sticker, Save the Birds? Well, they might go, whoa, no, I'm not going to do that. But if I came up to them and said, hey, I have this petition to save the birds, could you just sign it that you agree that we should be saving the birds? And they say, oh, yeah, I'll just sign that. And then you say, hey, we're going to be having an event coming up in the future. Would it be okay if I invited you to this event? And they say, oh, yeah, sure, sure. Okay, to put your email on here. They put their email on the sheet. Mm-hmm. And then you say, hey, I also may be giving out a little thank you to people who signed this petition. We'll let you know what happened to the petition. Could you put your address on here? And they put their address down there. And then, hey, in the future, we may want to invite you to a small gathering of those people who are really wanting to save the birds. Could I get your phone number? Sure. And you put your phone number down there. Now they come around and said, and today we have this bumper sticker for those people who are really supportive of Save the Birds. If you have a $5 or greater donation, that would be great. Now, yes, I've agreed on the petition. I've agreed to give you my email address. I've agreed to give you my mailing address. I've agreed to give you my phone number. And now it's just consistency in behavior. Once you move in that direction, you want to continue. It's much easier to get that $5 for the bumper sticker because they've already said yes so many times that in their mind, they've already created a path moving in that direction. So consistency is almost like Newton's, what is that, third law? An object in motion tends to stay in motion. Well, a thought in motion tends to stay in that same motion unless acted upon by an outside force. Consistency then, if you go back to childhood, you learn something. It's a bias. And now things that affirm that grow and grow and grow. And your backing, your behavior is consistent. Like, I like karate, I'm going to take karate, I'm going to read books on karate. It gets more and more and more consistent. If someone tells me karate is violent and I shouldn't be doing it, I'm like, you're nutso, right? Rather than for me actually listening to them and listening to their reasoning and maybe there is something that's of value, I have moved so far in this direction that I can't understand someone that doesn't love karate like I do. Right? So from early childhood, we start having a consistency in our own behavior and we tend to continue to act in that way. An influencer can move us in that same direction. One is we've already checked that we like them because what they're talking about is consistent with us. Yeah. So we tend to want to continue being influenced by somebody who is also in keeping what we already have established, right?
Or belief, yeah.
Our confirmation bias. So the influencer also has authority. If they have 100,000, 1 million followers, subscribers, well, obviously they're an authority. We talk about the guy who had the microphone on stage with the people in the audience in the video talking about something, and with that person, he looks like an authority. The person who gets on TV, well, an ad. You see an ad on YouTube, and somebody's wearing a medical jacket, and they've got a stethoscope,
yeah.
And they talk about this special regimen that can get your eyesight back in one day. It's a secret recipe. Click here. And you're like, oh, they're an authority. They've got a medical jacket on. So people can be authorities from having the look of an authority.
The number of followers.
Number of followers.
The uniform.
Mm-hmm. And let's just go right to the next one, which is consensus. Consensus is, it's called something like bandwagon. Bandwagon is if there are 8 people going somewhere already and they say, hey, we're all going here, come on with us. You're like, okay, I'll go with you because there's others already doing it. If there's no one on board this wagon and the driver of the wagon says, we're going to this fundraiser, come with us. You're like, well, there's no one else there. But once 8 of your friends are on board, you may just say, you know what, I'm going to go with them. It's a social movement, consensus. Others are followers. So back to an influencer, when they have loads of followers, even if they are fake followers. How many times you get like somebody who wants to, they follow you on Instagram, they've got 10,000 followers. And when you start looking at their followers, the followers have followed 10,000 people and they have no followers themselves. So all of their followers are fake followers.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, but they're trying to use the number of followers as consensus that they actually have influence.
That's a computer.
And then finally, scarcity. Scarcity, we talked about scarcity in old shows, and scarcity of influence is the influencer says, I have a special program this week coming up Friday. I only have 10 slots available. The first 10 people who are able to go get to join me personally and talk to me. And so now there are a million followers. There's only 10 slots. It's scarce. I want to be part of it. And twofold, if you miss it, you now feel bad that you missed it.
Yeah.
We talked about having a girlfriend. I had a girlfriend that there's more to it than that, but we'll keep it simplified, is that I was competing with another person for this woman. And I was emotionally caught up in the competition because that's called scarcity. There's one of her and two of us. That means, like, if there was one of me and seven potential girlfriends, you can sit back and take your time. But when there's two people and one of the resource, right? Two people, one resource, you're now like, oh,
it's easy to win.
Before it goes away, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. So scarcity also. So influencers use scarcity. Technology. Remember we talked about this, that people invest so much time in technology. I want to just ask a few of this. How many hours do you spend a week in technology? Do you feel more confident spending time with the technology in contact with others through phone, email, text, chat, or personal? What I mean by this is that a lot of our information is derived from technology. Mm-hmm. That we don't have a lot of personal connection with other people. And if we connect to a lot of outside people just through technology, and we're losing some connection points, and we'll talk about tone of voice, we'll talk about body language, and we're only talking about what's going on in technology. And I want to skip right through this because there's so many things, is that technology for many, us, our children, and people with their children, young children, have become the electronic babysitter. That they have grown up with technology as part of their life, that there's this addiction to social media. In fact, they're connected to their friends through social media more so than live interaction. They can't live without the phone. It's actually been shown to be physically part of our brain. Ooh, what does that mean? When we connect through social media on our phone, a portion of our brain is connected to the phone, connected to all those people, connected through the phone to the outside communication. And we have parts of our brain developed that have been linked. You know how some people can really quickly do stuff through their phone? Their emotions, their brain, their phone become, it's like an extension of yourself, that there is a mind-phone connection. Mm-hmm. And when you take that phone away and it's somewhere else, your brain physically feels disconnected.
Yeah, and you start to talking, say, oh, maybe have some email they have to check. I have 2 hours, they're not checking my email.
Yeah, check my email, where are my friends, what are they doing, what am I missing out on?
Mm-hmm.
That it's almost like I have to close my eyes now for an hour and I wanna see what's around the room. I have to open my eyes. It is, maybe it's our new sense. We have taste, smell, hearing, touch, and we have cell.
Yeah.
No, it's another sense. It's a sense that's connected to our brain, yeah, through social media. So maybe we have to add that as a new sense. It's an easy way to keep busy or distracted. If you're bored and you have nothing to do, you're just on your phone, you're on the computer, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're wasting time. I don't know how many times I've gone down a rabbit hole of YouTube videos on anything.
For me, it's funny when I go to the airport almost every week and I see the people waiting for boarding, and I make my statistic, I can say 95% of the people is like that.
I used to play that breaker game. You remember that breaker game that was on the old BlackBerry?
Mm-hmm.
Where you just bounce the ball and brick breaker, I think it was called, something like that.
Yeah, but you are connected.
Connected with that. The other thing that we have when we give our kids cell phones, or when we, you know, when kids are given computers and stuff, is that there had been an expectation that the content that they were seeing was safe. And now we are understanding that it's not. It's not necessarily that there's disinformation. There are people who actually want to do harm to our children, our society. There are people out there that are specifically creating arguments on the internet, creating arguments on Instagram.
Yeah.
And their target is to get Americans upset with each other. I don't know if I just made that up, but I think it's true. I think there are, like, there are, what do they call them, trolls? But, like, paid trolls to disrupt the society and make people angry with each other. And if you can believe that, that when you go on and see people arguing with each other, that this is set up in order for people to argue and waste their time and make people angry with each other, it could. It could be the destruction of America, the world.
It's not really destruction.
Friends are just a click away. And lastly, social media can become a substitute for real connection.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about the brain change from stimulation. So when we have this connection to social media, that our brains can actually grow. And a few weeks back, we talked about this. We talked about the neuroplasticity city map, that when we have an area of activity in our brain that gets stimulated and continues to be stimulated, that area in our brain grows. We get more neurons, more connections, more synapses forming, and we bring more connection around those points. If that is the case, therefore, when we are focused on our phone, focused on thoughts, focused on our biases, we grow those connections in those areas, that our brain becomes nearly inextricably linked to our phone, to social media, to our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really difficult to snip those thoughts and snip those connections.
Yeah.
With social media, with connection, that the ability to observe and analyze tone of voice and body language becomes difficult to impossible. That in real life, face-to-face communication, words have about 7% of the real content of what is trying to be communicated. The tone of voice has a huge impact. And the body language, when we see somebody's body language, are they saying it as they're like really confident in talking to us? Are they saying it like this, but they're making it look like they're unsure of themselves? Body language has a huge amount of information.
Yeah.
And without that, with only social media, that we see, and also when we see an influencer on social media talking about something, we see just a moment in time of maybe 100 takes that they did to get it perfect in how they want to come across. And when we can't have a live interaction with them, we can't tell if they're full of malarkey. You know malarkey? It's another word for something else that I'm not going to say right now.
Okay.
But if they're full of lies, or if they really are true and truthful and honest and open. And we may not even see that if we're live with them, but at least we have a better chance. That when we aren't there to observe and analyze, that our radios of listening are tuned to the wrong station because of our biases. We only hear what we want to hear. They could be actually speaking a different language, but we think they're talking our language because we want to hear only what we want to hear, and we only filter in what we want to filter in. That then, therefore, we're miscommunicating a majority of the time. Well, one is that we're not getting full communication from all sources. We're limiting the communication from sources we want to accept. And can we ever trust the message, because people have ulterior motives for the messages they give? Again, running's bad. Is that really the message, or is the motivation, I want to get followers?
Yeah. Strategy.
So how do we break that? How to break the spell? Well, it starts when we are young. For us, today is the first day for the next day of your programming. Change your programming starting today. Look at alternative views. Remove, filter social media. Hey, try to get social media out of your life. Understand the biases and endgame. So even if you're going to listen to what you normally listen to, understand who are the stakeholders in that social media. Who are the people? Why, where's this propaganda coming from? Why? Is it for money? Is it to move the market? Is it to create wealth for someone else? Do the research and refuse to be a victim. Learn to see the difference between malarkey and the truth. Thanks for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
We'll see you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.